such meaningless thought. The shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred. The time is now. The winds have changed. Read the signs. No time to hide. The winds have changed.
Millennia ago, from the little cave on the tiny island of Patmos in the Aegean Sea, the heavens opened. Since then, the world has been fascinated by the cosmic upheaval brewing on the horizon of history. The upheaval is now upon us. It is within us. To some degree, it always has been. But there has been a sudden and violent shift in the affairs of the world. The winds have changed. Heaven will not be silent. Let's now join Father Anthony Bush, pastor of St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago, and author of A Mother's Plea, For the Winds Have Changed. Together we can pave the way for a hopeful response to the signs of our times.
And good Monday afternoon. This is Mary Hallin Fiorito. I am the Cardinal Francis George Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center and the DeNicola Center for Ethics and Culture at the University of Notre Dame. Happy to be sitting in today for Father Anthony, as I do on most Mondays. Today is October 28th. It is the Feast of St. Simon and Jude. St. Jude, the patron saint of hopeless cases. And so I think it's... and my guest, Dan Proft, is already laughing because I think he knows where I'm going to go with this. Dan Proft, who is just down the dial from us at Chicago's Morning Answer, 5 a.m. to 9 a.m. on AM 560. Dan, thank you so much for joining us.
Yeah, of course.
And one of the reasons, listeners, I wanted to have Dan in, as I do occasionally, he is now an official friend of the show, for which I'm so grateful, is because there's so much going on politically, both locally and nationally, and Dan being probably one of the more astute political commentators that we have, who also, of course, brings his Catholic faith and understands some of these issues through a Catholic lens. And so I always really enjoy getting his feedback on this. But one of the things I wanted to start with, because it does really impact our Catholic school system in some ways, is the strike of the Chicago public school system teachers. The union really is on strike, correct? Not necessarily all the teachers.
Right.
What's the Venn diagram on that? Are all the teachers part of the union?
No, not necessarily. You can effectively opt out per the Janus decision. I mean, you're bargained on behalf of, but you don't have to pay fair share because of the Supreme Court's decision in Janus.
Right, which is recent.
Yeah, and of course, as people are getting educated, watching this play out in real time, you have different unions representing some of the teacher aides and coaches like SEIU, which
right.
has come to apparently an agreement in principle with the school system, effectively the mayor's office. I like this, too, because it reminds you, even though the Chicago Public School System is a separate taxing body, this is all run out of the mayor's office. And so the anytime you see a mayor doing so, like a two-step about, oh, you got to talk to the CPS about that. I mean, it's an appointed school board, mayoral appointees. She, just as previous mayors, is at the center of the negotiation. She's at the center of the ire coming from the teachers union. So just remember that anytime outside of a strike where you have politicians pretend like the city doesn't run the schools, just remember this moment because the city runs the schools.
Right. And so you... Now, this is news to me. There has been a tentative agreement reached?
With SEIU.
Okay.
Correct. But not CTU, not the Chicago Teachers Union.
I see.
There's no agreement there yet. I mean, over the weekend.
So SEIU are the
service employees.
Correct.
And
so
they
like
have some of the aides.
Gotcha.
Yeah,
all right. I did hear that on the news.
Yeah.
Well, one of the reasons I referenced St. Jude, other than the fact that it's his feast day today, is that I feel like everything old is new again. You know, I was remembering back when I started my professional career, I worked for an organization called Big Shoulders, which was a philanthropic group that supports Catholic inner city schools. So that's
still
how
is.
Yes, correct. It was affiliated with the Archdiocese at the time I started there. Now it's an independent charitable organization. But at the time I started, Mike Royko, the former Chicago Tribune and Chicago Daily News columnist, the flat above a tavern, as he called himself, flat above a tavern, Chicago newspaper man, wrote an excellent piece on, they must have been striking around the same time, so it was something reflective of that. And his younger brother, his dad had died, I think, and so the mom was raising them alone, and the younger brother had started to kind of move in the wrong crowds. They lived in Humboldt Park, and so his mom transferred him, scraped together what she could, and transferred him into a Catholic high school. So it must have been, it was the same order that runs the parish that we're speaking here from now. The studio, the Resurrectionists, had a couple of high schools, Weber and Gordon Tech. This must have been Weber when it was still open. Mm-hmm. And so he said his first day there, he said, you know, he called him the kid brother in his columns. The kid brother, one of the brothers asked the kid brother a question, and the kid brother gave a smart aleck answer. And the next thing the kid brother remembered was opening his eyes on the floor and looking at the ceiling because the brother had decked him. And but he said, you know what? The lesson took. He said his brother graduated at the top of his class, you know, went on to be apparently a very successful businessman. And so he used that story to talk about the disarray of discipline and academic success, et cetera, in the public schools, and how there must have been a comment. I tried to find the column, but it's so far back in the archives I couldn't get it. But someone in the public school system and the mayor's office had made some kind of derogatory comments about the Catholic school system. And he said, you know, when you think about the tax burden alone, the Catholic schools save the city of Chicago, you should be writing the cardinal a thank you note every year, thanking them for, first of all, turning out productive human beings who can read and write, mm-hmm. but secondly, for the tax burden they relieve the city of, with no help and with nothing so much as a textbook. You know, one of my daughter's teachers at St. Luke's in River Forest has a little chant he makes the kids do every now and then, which is, how much does the government give us? And the kids all say, nothing. And so he says, then you need to appreciate what your parents have done for you here. So,
well, the good news is now with the tax credit scholarship program that's in effect, it's making private school and Catholic school more accessible to more families. So that's just in its second year, so it's in its infancy, but there were 7,000 scholarships handed out last year, mm-hmm. and more are coming as more money is raised by private donors to provide this tax credit scholarship
right.
for kids to go to private and parochial as well as you know, other religiously affiliated schools.
Right. Or even, or as you mentioned, you know, the private schools like the Montessori schools,
yes.
or the Waldorf schools,
yep.
where, you know, for kids who might learn best in a different manner, their parents have that option, right? As far as I know.
Well, right. Otherwise, you know, in most cases, I mean, you have a significant number of students in CPS now going to charter schools, many of those that are controlled by the union as well. But
and are the charter schools on strike as well then?
Well, for those that are unionized,
yeah. okay.
right, their
okay.
personnel are out. But the bottom line is the Chicago public school system is a rolling catastrophe. It has been for half a century. You started out, it seems like we're having the same conversation. That's because it is exactly the same conversation as we had 7 years ago, the last time the teachers struck when Emanuel was the mayor. It's the same exact, I mean, it's almost like they're, each side is reading from a script.
Mm-hmm.
You're too generous on the front side, the mayor. Then you think you're going to just sort of concede your way out of it. And Lori Lightfoot's having a difficult time finding a blank check big enough written on the backs of enough Chicago taxpayers to get CPS to say yes. But it's the same old thing. The only difference between now and 7 years ago is the financial picture of the Chicago public school system is that much worse.
Right.
And the actual total student population is that much smaller. I mean, this is a school system that has lost 100,000 kids over the last 20 years.
Mm.
And ironically, for all the talk and the terrible reporting by the Chicago Political Press Corps about class size and teacher-student ratio, 100,000 fewer kids than 20 years ago. And 50 more schools.
Hmm.
How do you square that? The teacher ratio.
50 more new schools.
50 schools more than they had 20 years ago.
Wow.
With 100,000 less kids. So explain to me this overcrowding crisis. Number one. Number two, teacher-student ratio. National average is 17 to 1. Students to teachers. Students per teacher. Chicago is 15 to 1. So they're better than the national average. When you include all of the personnel, because we're talking about wraparound service and all these personnel.
Right.
37,000 CPS employees, 21,000 are teachers, 37,000. So that's one employee for every nine students. It's a $9 billion enterprise for 350,000 kids. I don't know that you could spend $9 billion in an effort to educate 350,000 kids any worse than the Chicago public school system does it.
Well, can we, let's sort of dissect that a little bit, because you and Amy, your co-host at Chicago's Morning Answer, your analysis of this has been incredibly comprehensive, which is really helpful for people who have access only to the Chicago Press Corps, right?
So there's no contextual data.
So can we talk about some of that data? Why don't we start with teacher salaries and benefits? I can tell you what the average salary, when I started at Big Shoulders, I think the average salary for one of our elementary school teachers was like $19,000 a year, plus your healthcare benefits. And the church does offer very good comprehensive healthcare. That's, you know, what we lack in salaries. We were always treated very generously for our healthcare. However, the pensions are the one thing that really, not that salaries distinguish enough, but it's the pensions that really
Before any deal is cut, before they accept the 16% salary increase over 5 years that's been proposed, they're already Chicago public school teachers. They're the highest paid big city teachers in the country, adjusted for cost of living.
Right
now,
in the country,
as they are on strike. Obviously, they'll just increase their lead over second place, New York, if they were to ratify the deal that's on the table, where the median salary would be $100,000 by the end of the contract. And in addition to that, you right now, before the deal, they pay the median salary teacher, who maxes out, puts all her years into max out, will pay $40,000 into her pension, will get guaranteed $2 million plus back, because they're defined benefit pensions. $40,000 in, $2 million back. This is why CPS has, at present, this according to Truth in Accounting, CPS has just under $20 billion worth of bills and less than $3 billion to pay for them. This is why it's junk rated. This is why you can't make the math work. You will never be able to make the math work,
right?
Because you're just conferring salaries and benefits that are unfinanceable, unless you really want to get serious with liquidating everybody's homes, imposing a city income tax, and trying to get more blood from fewer stones.
Right. And so of that 40K, I believe I've also heard you reference, is that an actual figure that they pay in, that 40K, or is that subsidized?
They pay 2% of their salary. So how it should work is, the employee pays 9% of the salary and the school district matches it. And that's set aside for the pension. How it actually works for the last 30 years in CPS is the school pays their 9%. And then they're also paying 7 percentage points of the 9 points that the teacher is supposed to pay.
Okay.
So they're actually paying, the teacher is paying 2% of her salary, and the school district is paying 16% of the rest of the other 16 percentage points of the total 18 percentage points of contribution.
Oh,
so that's how you get only 40 in and 2.1 million out. Even if they were paying their full half, you're still talking about 140,000 in over the life of the average teacher for $2 million plus back. I mean, that's just absurd. You can't. Nobody listening who is in the private sector, who has a 401k, nobody has that sort of deal. It's not even close. I mean, to get that kind of guaranteed return in the private sector, you'd have to save 13x that. You'd have to save 1.3, 1.4 million to be able to pay yourself that sort of pension on an annualized basis. And remember, the net present value is so high because they have these 3% COLAs that compound annually, 3% kickers. I mean, it's just so out of whack that they don't want to talk about the numbers. They want to talk about this as sort of a litmus test. You either like teachers or you don't. And if you don't give us a blank check, then you don't like teachers.
Right.
That's their attitude.
Right. And so further in terms of the finances of how the teachers are paid, so incredibly generously, the highest paid teachers in the country. And this goes for chemistry teachers as well as for driver's ed, people who teach driver's ed. I think your show was the one who featured a driver's ed teacher at one of the schools who I think had something like a $2.5 million pension by the time he, and he was a driver's ed, not that, I mean, teaching kids to drive safely certainly is a admirable skill, but, you know, most people, my family, I had to pay a private company to teach my kid how to drive. You know, the services that we are providing through taxpayer dollars, you know, and again, you've also made a very good point, and if you could help me clarify this for our listeners, it's not just people who live in the city of Chicago, correct?
Yeah, because Chicago Public Schools get most of their financing from the state.
Right.
Unlike your suburban districts that are mostly financed by local property tax dollars, Chicago is majority funded by the state. It's about the high 40s in terms of the percentage of financing that comes from the local taxpayers in Chicago, and then they get about 10% from the federal government.
And so, and what are we getting for that in terms of the quality of the teachers? I do want to talk about the overall product that comes out, but let's just talk about the skill set of the teachers. If you're paying, I think most people would think, if we have the highest paid teachers in the country, my goodness, we must have U of C, you know, PhDs in economics teaching our students. But you've also done some research on teachers in the Chicago Public Schools not being able to pass basic skills tests.
Yeah, they don't administer the basic skills test anymore. So that's a way
because the results were so embarrassing.
Yeah, I mean, it's not to say that there aren't great teachers in CPS. Of course there are.
Right.
It's a small fraction that are bad. But hey, look, when the Sun-Times looked at this 15 years ago, you had basically 1 in 10 CPS teachers not being able to pass a basic skills test that's so easy a high school freshman should be able to pass it. So, you know, 10% of at the time, 25,000. That's 2,500 teachers. That's a big problem.
Yeah.
Now it's 21,000 teachers. So has it improved greatly since then? I doubt it because you can't fire a CPS teacher.
Right.
So, yeah, so that's a problem. And then, of course, you get to what the student outcomes are for most of these students that are not in the select enrollment schools.
And well, that's a very good point because I was going to say, especially if these teachers who perhaps don't have particularly strong academic skills are then put into schools where you have students who are really struggling or from very, you know, difficult socioeconomic areas. That's just compounding a problem upon a problem.
Yeah, and you have an overlay that with the disciplinary problems, and this is where the teachers have a legitimate beef. They don't get backed by administrators, principals, and administrators and the board when it comes to disciplining students who are running amok in their classrooms, and it's, you know, it could just be a small percentage of students, a handful of students that are disrupting the learning environment for the rest of the students.
Right.
And it's this hands off, you know, end the school to jail pipeline nonsense that basically says you don't discipline, you don't, I mean, it's the same thing with Gavin Newsom did in California, signing state laws, you don't suspend, and the discipline has to, you know, come down across racially representative lines and all these other things, mm-hmm. irrespective of the facts. And it's just, it's a confluence of all of the worst elements of central planning and cultural Marxism. That's Chicago.
Right. Well, long gone are the days of, you know, the Mike Royko story about his brother getting decked by one of the religious resurrectionist brothers at his school. But,
and nobody's saying anybody has to be decked.
Right.
But I mean, the idea that you can't control your classroom and the combination of the adults that are teaching and the adults that are in charge of administering the school can't get control of their classrooms is absurd.
Right. And then of course, too, remember you had parents. Now, if we had come home from school with a disciplinary problem in my house, my parents would back the teacher. Like they wouldn't, you know, hire a lawyer and get a public relations firm, et cetera, et cetera. So there was real cooperation and I think respect of the parents for the teachers in a way. And I agree. I think the teachers have a legitimate beef. Their hands are tied in many aspects. And if all it takes is one unruly kid, one bully in a class to really shut down learning.
And you also have the teachers' hands tied to some extent, too. I don't expect teachers to be miracle workers. You have a lot of kids that are coming to school that are coming from a terrible family, terrible home situation where they don't have an adult that's engaged in their intellectual development. And the teacher can only do so much to make up the difference.
Right.
So I concede those points. But, all of these problems are part and parcel of the same philosophy, the same government-centric philosophy of ordering a free society and ordering a school system.
Right. Okay, well, Dan, we're going to go to our first break. And when we come back, I'd like to talk a little bit about sort of what we're seeing in terms of the results of public school education, where they might fall in terms of graduation rates and, you know, skills test mastery, that sort of thing. So, listeners, please don't go away. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
If you live in the city of Chicago, aren't you a little tired of not having your child in school? If this is you, please listen to the following announcement. St. Stan's School has an amazing PK 3 through 8th grade program focused on leadership and social-emotional learning, and is one of the only schools to implement the Reading and Writing Project of Columbia University and the University of Chicago. Everyday math across the board, PK 3 through 8th, by our highly educated and dedicated teachers, your gifted child will be at a higher and deeper level of thinking and conceptual understanding, so they will have a full comprehension of what they're learning in any subject. St. Stan's students are academically challenged with advanced level placement opportunities, as their test scores and high school admissions speak volumes. St. Stan's is an integral part of the Wicker Park community, where you feel welcome and at home with other families and friends who enjoy the same warm, friendly, and safe atmosphere for their children. We have small classroom size, which makes a difference in the whole learning experience. Many schools have excellent programs. At St. Stan's, we empower students to be excellent, learn, lead, love. It is a selective admissions process. Grades 1 through 8 are tested and interviewed. Call 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. Or stop by at 1255 North Noble Street. That's one block north of Division, just off the Kennedy. More information at ststanschicago.org. That's ststanschicago.org.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka Church is the official sanctuary of the Divine Mercy in Chicago. Founded by Polish immigrants in the late 1800s, this historic church is more commonly known as St. Stan's. One church, many cultures, in that masses are held in English, Spanish, and Polish. The church is two blocks north of Division on Noble, just off the Kennedy. St. Stan's has been so prominent in the history of the church in Chicago that the Kennedy Expressway was even built around it. St. Stan's is easy to get to. It is the sanctuary for quiet prayer before the celebrated iconic monstrance. For Mass and confession times and special events, please visit our new website at ststanschurch.org. That's ststanschurch.org. And while you're on the homepage, feel free to click on the donations tab to help in the continuing restoration of St. Stan's.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And I'm joined today by Dan Proft, who is political commentator and attorney and the co-host of Chicago's Morning Answer, just down the dial from us at 560 a.m. from 5 a.m. till 9 a.m. Central Time every day. And you can also watch on YouTube, can't you? You have a
Yeah,
you can do it online. Everything's
and we got all the bells and whistles.
Yeah, so everybody from all over the country can and beyond. You know, you have people listening from outside of the country. Lawyer and fancy lawyer in Switzerland.
The magic of the magic of the interweb.
Yes. So, I just want to sort of wrap up this conversation on the public schools. I don't want to spend tremendously more time on it, but, you know, I'm one of the other things Royko pointed out, and in our early days at Big Shoulders, when we were just getting it up and running, what we found most interesting is CEOs of companies or managing directors of law firms, that kind of thing, would say to us, it's very difficult for them to find support staff, secretarial staff, who, one guy I remember telling me, I can't find a secretary who can write out a phone message, like literally with good English, who can write well, who can. And they said, when we started recruiting directly from Catholic high schools for, you know, kids who weren't going on to college, entry level support staff positions, he said everything was so, he said it was night and day in terms of the way kids were prepared, you know, having their basic skill set, and kids who came out with a sense of order and understanding of a hierarchical system, right? You and your boss are not equal. Therefore, if you're asked to do something, you need to do it. You know, dressing properly, that sort of thing. All these sort of basic life skills. And again, this is not to knock, you know, public schools overall. But, it, you know, when we as taxpayers are paying so much for this product, as you pointed out during our first segment, Dan, what are we getting statistically speaking in terms of kids who actually are prepared to succeed, even and college isn't meant for everybody.
Small fraction.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe you're around 1 in 6 CPS students will get a BA by the time they're 25.
Wow.
I mean, I think it's less than 15 of every 100, but I'll be generous and say that. You basically have the student population below 30% in math and reading preparedness, you know, doing a grade level math and reading. Frankly, you have dropout rates that are, and we did this comparison. We did a story on it at Chicago City Wire, looked at dropout rates in CPS versus others. High schools in the suburbs that have similar poverty numbers in terms of the percentage of kids on free and reduced lunch, similar demographics, like Thornton Township in the south suburbs.
Right.
Smaller, but it's demographically similar. Actually, a CPS, 85% of the kids are free or reduced school lunch. At Thornton, 97%.
Wow. So socioeconomically.
Yeah, socioeconomically, very similar. Yeah. CPS's dropout rate is 10x Thornton's.
So what is it now? I just saw something, I think, in the Tribune the other day that said the dropout rate was only 20% now, they graduate 80% of their students.
Well, dropout rate is different than
graduation rate.
And the graduation rate is manipulated. You can't really use test scores anymore because so few kids are taking the tests.
How is dropout rate different from graduation rate? It would seem to me if you've dropped out, you don't graduate.
Yeah, but they look at, you know, graduation rate. You know, you're looking at a 4-year rather than some of it take longer than 4 years.
Right.
There's just other variables that go into it. But the bottom line is, think about 10x Thornton Township. And think about 10% of the kids dropping out.
Right.
I mean, those kids dropping out of CPS, what do you think they're more likely to do? Productive things or unproductive things when they drop out of high school or maybe even the later stages of grade school? So, I mean, that's another indicator of system failure. And that's the story of CPS. It's system failure, no matter how you size it up. It's a system that's incapable of producing what we want it to produce. And we continue to pour more money into the hopes that it will so that nobody's called a bad name and nobody's charged with being anti-teacher or anti-kid, in particular anti-minority kid, which is, of course, the majority of the students at CPS. Look, the spending has gone up 3x in real dollars over the last 20 years. What do we have to show for it?
Right.
Property taxes in Chicago, real dollars, again, over 20 years, have increased 50%. The enrollment in the school, as I mentioned, in the school system is declining. So we're just paying more and more for, as we see, fewer and fewer students. So you're just making it more and more attractive for the adults in the system. And we seem to be completely indifferent to the results the system produces. It's the most remarkable thing.
Yeah.
I mean, we can't even get people to pay attention to the Chicago Tribune investigative story that found over the last 10 years, there are more than 500 credible cases of sexual assault of children in CPS at the hands of adults in the system.
Right.
Nobody even pays attention to that.
Well, I'm very grateful that you raised that because, you know, it's hard when, you know, even when I was working at the Archdiocese, anytime you brought up the Shakeshaft report, for example, Carol Shakeshaft at Hofstra University, who did that huge study on sexual abuse in public schools, where she found that 1 out of 10 public school students nationwide, on average, will be sexually abused in some way by the time they graduate from high school. And she said, if you think the Catholic Church has problems, you have no idea the tsunami that awaits you with the public schools. What happened? I think she got a little bit of play, but then everybody just keeps saying, well, but the Catholic Church, you know, let's bankrupt the Catholic Church by suing them. But when you look comprehensively, I think the Associated Press found 17,000 separate cases. There's a big AP story nationwide just in over a 2-year time period, something like that, of kids who had been sexually assaulted in public schools, rather.
And this is not to excuse the Catholic Church in any way.
No, it's not. But, you know, if you even try to bring it up, you're accused of deflecting.
Right.
Our sins are our sins.
My point. Let's talk about it all. So let's talk about it. Why would you not talk about an institution that has charged over 330,000 kids? Used to be 450,000, but okay. Why aren't the trial lawyers attracted to this at all?
You know,
$9 billion enterprise. That's CPS.
Right.
So you want to talk about deep pockets. And no trial lawyers want to take up any of these cases to impose some civil justice where perhaps criminal justice is not available. Like they did with the Catholic Church or with other institutions or in other cases. Why is CPS off limits? It says something about the political power structure in this city and state.
Yeah. Well, tell me that, though. I mean, this is I have a couple of friends from law school who do personal injury, and, you know, I don't understand the difference. And one of them said to me, well, there's a difference suing a public institution as opposed to a private institution like the Catholic Church. There's deeper pockets there. There's, you know, do you
they have
know?
No, I'm sorry. I'm sorry. These plaintiff's attorneys, do they have any problem suing the city over a police beating?
Okay. Fair enough. Yeah. I've just been puzzled by, as you mentioned, the lack of interest of PI attorneys.
Because
to go
it's
after
a sacred cow. And okay. Because the trial lawyers.
Well, I don't know many plaintiff's attorneys who are afraid of sacred cows. You know what I mean? If there's a big, verdict to get, then they'll go after it.
Really? Well, they could be put out of business. They're part of the Chicago Democratic power structure.
Okay.
They report to the Chicago crime families who are also effectively plaintiff's attorneys, like Madigan, like Cullerton. And if the word comes down from the power structure that you stay away from CPS, yeah, drug companies are easy targets. The Catholic Church is an easy target.
Right.
So, of course, the asbestos companies are easy targets.
Right.
CPS, not such an easy target politically, right. Particularly if you're getting political pressure to look the other way.
I see.
And that
wouldn't
surprise me at all.
Yeah, it just, I don't know. I guess I just, that's been baffling to me. But you make a good point. Certainly suing the city for everything from a trip and fall inside City Hall to police brutality. It's just odd to me. And I guess I hadn't thought of that, you know, from the political angle.
They could come in and put caps on damage awards and punitive damages awards that wouldn't be limited to CPS,
right?
For example. I mean, all you have to do is look at the D2s for Madigan and Cullerton, the Chicago Democrat crime families who are in political office in this city and state, and you'll see some of the biggest donors are the biggest trial lawyers.
Hmm. Oh.
See where Bob Clifford sends his money. See where Joe Power sends his money.
Yeah.
I mean, let's you know, you want to start naming names? Well, you want to be adults here? Do we want to run around like a bunch of cowards and pretend like we don't know what we know?
Right.
It's all there for public viewing.
Right.
It's just nobody wants to talk about it because the bread's getting buttered.
Well, and in the same way, no one wants to talk about how upwards of 50% of Chicago public school teachers don't send their kids to Chicago public
school.
Right.
What do they know?
Yeah.
They see what's going on day to day.
Right. And, well, in the same way that, as you talk about, the Democratic politicians in particular don't send their kids to public schools. The Obamas didn't. You know, the Madigans didn't. The Cullertons didn't. They either use parochial schools or they use, you know.
Arnie Duncan, CPS superintendent, his kids went to lab school.
Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely.
They're
rank hypocrites, but we love it in Chicago.
Yeah.
We say, give us more, and so you get more.
Yeah. Well, it's just extraordinary. I'm so grateful to you and Amy for keeping the spotlight on it because, you know, I think the Catholic Church abuse case was not for a couple of different journalists keeping the spotlight on it, it wouldn't have exposed what it did. And now really the safest place that your child can be if you're worried about sex abuse is in a Catholic school because of the, you know, just as one anecdotal story I've told a couple of times, my husband wasn't permitted to come into my daughter's fourth grade classroom to read a book on her birthday. They have this thing, you get to read a book on your birthday because his Virtus training, wasn't up to date. Now he had gone through it because he worked at a Catholic school previously. He'd had it like 12 different times. He'd been, you know, had been vetted, you know, separately and background check and everything else. And he was literally with the teacher there and the door open. He was not allowed to go in and read a book. And they just said, now you're going to come back next week, get your training updated, and then we'll let you in. They said, we make absolutely no exceptions.
And what are the Chicago Public Schools doing in response to the revelations from the Tribune? Who knows? I don't know. Maybe Phil Corboy can find out.
Yeah. But
there doesn't seem to be any interest.
Yeah, nothing at all. I mean, but what, you know people at the Chicago Tribune who, both investigative reporters and, you know, on the editorial board, what's their response to that? Why are they pressing for more? I mean, I know anytime there's especially in the Tribune, that kind of breaking investigative reporting, results come from it. There's been nothing, and are they trying to follow up on that?
I think that there is, I mean, they did this whole expose, and I assume, and that, again, that was only 10 years worth of records that they were able to obtain and sift through and cobble together the picture that they presented to readers and to the public. You know, I don't know what their angle is, if they are intent on going as far back as they can go and continuing to put the pressure on. But I mean, frankly, in recent editorials about the strike, They've just focused on the dollars and cents. There hasn't been that much talk about student performance, teacher performance, or this sex abuse scandal. I mean, and there's things, look, how about curriculum? We don't even talk about curriculum.
Well, right now, I'm grateful that you raised this in terms of when language is taught.
Yeah.
And the thing is, you know, now in Catholic schools, finally now we have in most schools at least Spanish, and in a couple of schools we have French, one or two have Latin, and they're starting it in kindergarten now,
right,
which I'm so happy for because I just got tossed into high school and, you know, my first year Latin book there. But kids don't learn languages best then. And
right, and we've known this for 3 decades,
right,
at least.
And I know for at least for the Catholic schools, you know, that is, it's sort of an extra, right? It's an add-on to do language, but they've scraped together the money because now they're accepting of the newest learning models, and I think they're getting very good results in that regard. However, CPS has money's not the issue. Like, it's not even the issue. They could have every class, you know, of kindergarten with a French teacher from France if they wanted. They've got that kind of money.
Well, it doesn't
and
cost
they don't
any.
Do it.
It doesn't cost any money. It would
right.
just be reordering what classes are being offered when and assigning
so
teachers accordingly.
From high school,
yeah,
too,
but,
right.
But when you're organized like a Soviet agrarian co-op, you're less likely to be open to those sorts of changes. And so they're not. Again, it's a system for the adults.
Right.
There's no consideration. It's not child-centered. It's not outcome-focused. So why do we do languages largely still in high school and CPS? Because that's the way we've always done it, and it's convenient.
Right.
Just because that's not where kids best learn languages, so what? It's the same thing with science. What's the, I say this all the time.
Right.
The first science class most CPS freshmen take? Biology.
Mm-hmm.
What do we know about how kids best learn science in high school? Physical science class first, then chemistry, then biology. Biology third in sequence. Why don't we change it? Because this is the way we've always done it and it's convenient.
Right.
Okay.
Well, do you know, are they required to by state law or by anything else that would govern their operation, look at just the issues that you're raising here? Is there any, do you know,
the only state law regarding curriculum is making sure that we teach LGBTQ curriculum
right.
now.
Well, yeah, that's been, yes, that's.
I mean, this is the attitude.
LGBTQ history as well.
Yeah, these are indoctrination camps. These are not institutions of intellectual development. And so you get what you get from an indoctrination camp, which is not a lot of independent critical thinkers prepared for success in life. I'm sorry, but those are the results. And people can turn a blind eye to it all they want, and you can call me all the names you want. The results are the results are the results. The data, the cost, the numbers are the numbers are the numbers.
Yeah. And I just look at the little St. Stan school right next to us from where we're broadcasting and, you know, drawing from kids from this neighborhood. This was sort of another thing that, you know, when we would be doing proposals for Big Shoulders that would be thrown at us, you know, was like, well, you can be selective in who you choose to be in your school, and public schools can't. They have to take everyone. And I just remember Cardinal Bernardine saying, no, the kids in Englewood and our schools in Englewood are from Englewood. They're from the same neighborhood. We're not importing kids from Winnetka to Englewood to be in our schools.
And compare, you know, St. Benedict, the African, and Inglewood to the local schools in terms of what the outcomes are.
Right.
I mean, there's a lot of comparisons and contrasts you can do with private schools and Catholic schools in the same neighborhoods drawing the same kids as the public schools, and the outcomes are very different. So there's something very different going on because it's the same kids, the same socioeconomic backgrounds, and different outcomes.
Right. Well, you know, and I suppose one variable would be the parental involvement, and I think that's probably a fair enough thing.
Yes.
You know, if you're paying for something, you tend to be more interested in how your child is doing and expect,
yes,
you know, if you're paying that sort of money.
But to that point, then why do we have a waiting list for charter schools? Why do we have a waiting list for selective enrollment? Why are kids discriminated against based on their household income and address? Anybody and everybody who wants to, has the parent, a guardian involved that wants better for their kid than the neighborhood school that's failed multiple generations, should be thrown that life preserver immediately. And that's not what we do.
No. Yeah. I've had a couple of people raise this to me, how the school buildings are staying open so that the students who rely on the public schools for breakfast, lunch, and then their take-home dinner can have their 3 meals a day. And I think that's sort of been a shock to a lot of, like wait, I'm paying for.
Yes.
Now, again, no one, if you had a hungry child in front of you, of course you would give them something to eat. No one is saying that, you know, we want to be. But the fact that, you know, my goodness, in a Catholic school, that wouldn't exist. Youth parents, I think, in some particular communities have become so dependent on the government for everything. including breakfast, lunch, and dinner.
And these are families that otherwise have link cards and right. and can purchase food subsidized by taxpayers, or completely provided by taxpayers right. in some cases. So right, I mean it's but there's just no accountability and there's no desire to impose any accountability. The problem is always that's not enough. We're not transferring enough. We're not underwriting enough. We're not controlling enough by holding the purse strings and the provisions above everybody's head. And this is how soul-crushing the welfare state has been. It's destroyed family. So another conversation people don't want to have, are these policies in the best interest of the family structure that's in the best interest of the kid? Well, nobody wants to have that conversation in this city either.
Yeah. And you know what I wonder, too, particularly on the food issue, because, I don't want to be accused at some point of not having a heart for the poor, but the waste that I've seen this firsthand. And one of my kids, went to a summer program at a public school, and every morning she'd go in and she'd have this little breakfast in front of her. And I'm like, I fed her breakfast. I don't need you to feed my child breakfast. They said, no, we're required to give your child a breakfast.
I'll tell you what.
I said, why? She doesn't need breakfast.
If you would
feed my own children.
If you would consolidate the schools and stop pretending that Fanger still has 5,000 kids when they have 200.
Yeah.
Well, CVS doesn't
remarkable.
Have 3,000 kids. They have 300.
Right.
If you started to consolidate the schools, since we've lost 100,000 kids in student population over the last 20 years, we could cut the number of high schools at least in half.
Right.
Then you start to achieve some real savings and create some real efficiencies. And I'm less concerned about the three meals a day that's being provided, even if it's redundant. But there's an unwillingness to tackle any of this. Everything is politically impossible because there's no political will to change the system. Why? Because there's no political consequences for continuing to run the system the way that we always have, which is why we're having the exact same conversation and we'll get the exact same outcome we did 7 years ago, the last strike.
Right. And what Mike Rocha was writing about 25 years ago.
Yeah.
Literally, you could just change the names and it would all be the same scenario. Well, we're going to go to our next break. Listeners, please do stay tuned as I continue my conversation about current events with Dan Proft, host of Chicago's Morning Answer. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
St. Stanislaus Kostka is the sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, where you can enter into the presence of Christ 24/7. Every first Saturday afternoon will be a special opportunity for healing. At 4:30, bring your petitions for our Blessed Mother's intercession as we pray the Rosary. Then, at 5, we share the body of Christ in the Holy Mass. Also, at 5:30, a Spanish Mass, followed by a Eucharistic procession, Adoration, the Divine Mercy Chaplet, and an anointing. Enter into the sacred space of St. Stanislaus Kostka and place yourself before Christ for healing. On first Saturday afternoon, starting at 4:30, find St. Stanislaus Kostka, the Sanctuary of the Divine Mercy, 2 blocks north of Division, on Noble, just off the Kennedy in Chicago, and find peace and healing.
The Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ.
If you live in the city of Chicago, aren't you a little tired of not having your child in school? If this is you, please listen to the following announcement. St. Stan's School has an amazing PK 3 through 8th grade program focused on leadership and social-emotional learning and is one of the only schools to implement the Reading and Writing Project of Columbia University and the University of Chicago. Everyday math across the board, PK 3 through 8th, by our highly educated and dedicated teachers, your gifted child will be at a higher and deeper level of thinking and conceptual understanding, so they will have a full comprehension of what they're learning in any subject. St. Stan's students are academically challenged with advanced level placement opportunities as their test scores and high school admissions speak volumes. St. Stan's is an integral part of the Wicker Park community, where you feel welcome and at home with other families and friends who enjoy the same warm, friendly, and safe atmosphere for their children. We have small classroom size, which makes a difference in the whole learning experience. Many schools have excellent programs. At St. Stan's, we empower students to be excellent, learn, lead, love. It is a selective admissions process. Grades 1 through 8 are tested and interviewed. Call 773-278-4560. That's 773-278-4560. 4560, or stop by at 1255 North Noble Street. That's one block north of Division, just off the Kennedy. More information at ststandschicago.org. That's ststandschicago.org.
And welcome back. This is Mary Fiorito sitting in for Father Anthony here on listener-supported Winds of Change on AM 750 WNDZ. And I have been joined this past hour by Dan Proft, who is the co-host of Chicago's Morning Answer, just down the dial from us in the Chicago area at AM 560 from 5 a.m. till 9 a.m. every morning. Dan, thank you. It's been it's always such a privilege to have you on the show.
Oh, my pleasure.
Because of the breadth and the depth of your knowledge. One of the other things happening in Chicago today is the second visit of President Trump to the city of Chicago. So I'd love to just kind of pick your brain a little bit on that. First time he came, it did not end so well.
All right. Yeah.
To put it mildly.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it's all this Chicago values nonsense. He's speaking to the, whatever those are.
He was here to go through the Chick-fil-A drive-thru, right?
Yeah. I mean, I'd love to hear. I mean, Eddie Johnson, he's speaking to the Association of Police Chiefs this morning before he leaves town. And Eddie Johnson is not attending because he needs to represent Chicago values. I don't exactly know what those are. I watched some of President Trump's speech this morning. He recognized Adam Wozni, who was a Chicago police officer who was shot and almost killed in the line of duty. He talked about an attack on law enforcement is an attack on Americans. He talked about what he and the federal government are doing to work with big cities to stop violent crime, to interdict violent crime, to put violent criminals, repeat violent criminals behind bars. And Chicago doesn't want any part of it. He's,
right.
We're here to help if Chicago ever wants any part of it. If you don't, then you'll continue to be one of the worst examples in the country with a murder rate that's more than
Are we the
count.
Highest in the country, our murder rate?
It's not per capita, but
okay.
But I mean, the most damning statistic, Chicago has more murders. It has for the last several years now, will again this year, more murders than L.A. and New York combined.
Yeah,
with one-sixth of the total population.
That is crazy.
So, and you know, it's the same thing with Houston, which is similar in size, demographically similar, third black, third white, third Hispanic, pretty
right.
much. And you know, the numbers are just astronomical by comparison in Chicago. They're all depressing numbers. But you know, they got it under control. And they're working on it, and give us some time. And it's, you know, plenty of blame to go around, and all the other two-step bull jive that you get from these same politicians, and
right.
including company men like Eddie Johnson. But it's just a sad commentary because, again, they put their whatever their misplaced Chicago values are, never quite defined, ahead of people's safety.
Yeah.
Remarkable.
But my understanding is, correct me if I'm wrong, but from what I know from police friends, the majority of them voted for Trump. Like I was at an elementary school. You know, this is kind of a funny thing. You know, my grade school still has reunions. We have grade school, and that's really a Catholic school thing. Like that's how close you become to your Catholic school classmates, is that, you know, 35 years later, you're still going to your grade school reunions. But a good number, I think I have one classmate from grade school who's a police lieutenant, one who's it's a couple of rank and file police officers and a couple of paramedics, because I grew up in an area where there were a lot of paramedics and fire families,
yeah.
right, and bungalows.
Mm-hmm.
And they all voted for Trump. And they said, oh, no. They said, you know, we were just kind of talking politics. And they said they didn't even know any of their coworkers who didn't vote for Trump. So it seems to me, at least from my, you know, unofficial poll of people I know, that there's a lot of support for President Trump among the rank and file officers.
Oh, yeah. I mean, he had a very warm reception from the police chiefs this morning at McCormick Place.
Right.
And, you know, and he will continue to. And it's part of the cultural divide. I mean, you have civilian political authorities in this city that have hamstrung in many ways the Chicago police, that want to play racial politics with public
right.
safety to the detriment of public safety. And, you know, Trump sort of calls them out on that.
Right.
And you know, if you want to just dislike Trump that much because of style or because of particular policy positions, fine. You're every right to do that. You can protest and you can lose your mind, do whatever you want. But you just have to look around and say, in Chicago, we've had every race, every ethnicity, every religion, every orientation in the positions of power.
Mm-hmm.
They've had one thing in common, party affiliation, for a century.
Mm-hmm.
How's it going?
Right.
And if you don't think it's going well, maybe that's pause for reconsideration. Maybe it isn't.
Yeah.
Apparently, so far, it isn't. Not that there's been much of a challenge put up by anybody with a different party affiliation. But I mean, I think that's essentially what he's doing. He's just calling it out in no uncertain terms, and he's standing in no uncertain terms with law enforcement, because the Chicago Police Department has its problems and will continue to have problems. And when the police and any police officer behaves badly, there's got to be a reckoning for that, because they have such power in society. Totally understand that. But the idea of putting yourself on the other side of the skirmish line against police as a civilian political office holder is just stunning to me. It just runs counter to the first charge of every government official, which is to provide for the physical security of your constituents.
Right. And you know, to me, every time there's one of these little, you know, temper tantrums, if you will, I think it just inspires more people to vote for President Trump. I mean, like that stupid cold open that Saturday Night Live did on Saturday, where it was a, you know, a mock Trump rally. And essentially they brought forward every stereotypical person that they think goes to Trump rallies, right? Ignorant people, you know, ignorant gun owners, that sort of thing. And it was just, I watched maybe the first few minutes, and I remember I turned to my husband, I said, this isn't even funny. Like,
no, I mean,
all this does is just make, you know.
Exactly. They need better writers, number one. Number two, I mean, how tone deaf are they? How beclowned was SNL? When you have Davidson go up and say, you know, we're going to make ISIS great again because you release ISIS at the same time that our troops are raiding and taking out Baghdadi. Way to go,
wow.
SNL. Boy, you really nailed it.
Yeah. And just, I tell you, you talk about God's timing. You know, that was perfect. It made them look completely foolish. But, you know, it just, to me, I just think, how do you think that mocking people who put Trump into office in the first place, and this is why, because they feel like he gets them, you know, and again, he's not perfect. He says inappropriate things at inopportune times, but you understand that he gets them.
Even more than he gets them, he's exposed the elites that we were supposed to follow blindly for so long in both parties.
Yeah.
And I mean, I go back to Victor Davis Hanson's formulation on Trump's 2016 campaign, and I think it's going to play out again in 2020 because no lessons have been learned by the left, which is Trump's basic value proposition was this: all those elites in academia, in Hollywood, corporate America, Wall Street, press corps, I know them all, and they're even worse than you think.
Wow.
And that's exactly, and people nod their head, said, you know what? You're right. And they've been wrong about everything. And my quality of life has declined under the blind leadership, or the blind fealty I'm supposed to give these quote unquote leaders.
Right.
And I'm done with it.
Right. Well, what do you think? Just kind of prognosticating on what this election is going to look like. Do you think Hillary Clinton's going to jump in?
I mean, she's maybe just daffy enough to do it, but I don't see it. I don't see any appetite for her. I don't know that that would change the calculus in terms of the top three or four candidates
right
now.
Well, and I want to bring up Joe Biden simply because, not because he's the, you know, purported front runner, but because he, you know, is the, of all the candidates, the one who talks about his Catholic faith the most. You know, do you remember that during the whole, I know, and which always, you know, of course, brings on a laugh from anybody who hears him say it. But, you know, I remember his comment, and this was during the last presidential election. We talk about taking his rosary and shoving it down somebody's throat. Like, if you criticize my Catholic faith and the way I live it out, I'll take my mother's rosary and shove it down your throat. I remember, oh my God, I was horrified. Like, what is he thinking? But he is someone who does claim to practice his faith.
Mm-hmm.
So, and this is a Catholic radio show, so I'd love to get your sense. He seems to be imploding.
Yes.
His turnaround, I have to say, on the Hyde Amendment was one of the moments where I thought, you have just given anybody who's holding out a shred of possibility of voting for a Democratic candidate, you in particular, you've just walked away from that. That he caved so quickly on what, frankly, even among Democrats, is a very popular policy.
Yeah, Biden's an empty vessel, and he's an empty vessel that's lost at sea, and I don't think he's going to find a port soon enough.
He's a ghost ship.
Yeah,
it's a Halloween analogy.
He really
he's
is.
He's a ghost ship.
He really is. So, no, I don't, I mean, I've said from the beginning, I thought that actually he was the weakest candidate in the Dem field.
You said that. Now, I remember you saying that over a year ago.
As much as everybody was saying, oh, he's the one who can beat Trump.
Uncle Joe is here,
Yeah, Scranton Joe and all that silliness. But no, I think he is dying the death of a thousand cuts, and I think he will continue to.
Well, do you think Elizabeth Warren is going to come out on top then?
I'll tell you what, I wouldn't. These are very strange times, mm-hmm. and there's a lot of concern about Elizabeth Warren's electability in Democrat ranks. You've seen a lot of op-eds and leftist outlets saying that in no uncertain terms.
And why is that? Why would that be?
Because she's just so obstinate and acerbic about policies that are just so wildly opposed by the majority of Americans, including mm-hmm. a lot of the swing voters. So, for example, taking private health insurance away from 175 million Americans who like their private health insurance. Right. It just doesn't fly. The Green New Deal fantasy stuff is, it just doesn't fly. The wealth tax. I mean, there's just a lot of things. And I frankly, her high energy notwithstanding, I just don't think she presents that well or that attractive a figure. And also, I think, you know, the energy in the Democratic Party is with some of the congressional freshmen. And I think a 70 plus year old for them is less than ideal. So I think it's strange. I can't believe I'm going to say this, but I would not be surprised to see Pete Buttigieg be the Barack Obama of 2020.
Right. Well, he kind of checks all the boxes, doesn't he? You know, he's attractive. He's, you know, in a gay marriage. He's very smart. I mean, I have to say, anytime I've heard him speak, other than the ridiculous comment he made about, you know, attempting to use scripture to justify abortion by saying scripture talks about the breath of life. I'm like, what are you talking about?
Yeah. It's absurd.
You've not heard the story of, you know, the Annunciation with Jesus and the unborn baby and, you know, that whole thing.
Yes.
And I don't think he's Catholic. I think he's like Episcopalian or something, I think. But
whatever he is, he's not a biblical scholar. We
correct,
know that.
Yes, absolutely. No, he needs a little refreshment. But, you know, I have also seen some criticisms of him in left-wing, you know, publications that he's not the right kind of gay person. He's the one that most Americans would accept now, right? Because you have two white men who are educated and wealthy and good-looking, and he's too stereotypical, and he is not reflective of, you know, the complete rainbow.
Yeah, well, I think those...
And the gender unicorn. He's not... I don't want to say not gay enough, but he's not radical enough in his orientation to make some in that community want to come out. And they think, you know, because... I think the sense is it makes people look at us as gay people who might be in thruples or who might be in polygamous relationships or who might be transgender, you know, the variety of, you know, sexual abnormalities that are coming out now. And you're saying you don't even reflect that. So,
well, yeah,
does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. But I mean, that shows you how fringed the Democrat socialists have gotten. But I will tell you that I think that he has great potential appeal, some that exist now and the upside for those same champagne socialists who voted and supported and financed Barack Obama, which is in part why he's raised as much money as he has.
Right.
I mean, he's right there step for step with Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders lapping Joe Biden by a factor of three in terms of money raised and money on hand. And I just think about 2008 and we're going to make history first. Black president, and think about 2020 and where that party is so obsessed with identity politics and trying to turn the entire country into a college campus when we're going to make history with a young gay man.
Right.
The first
young gay married man.
Right. But the first gay president of the United States, that has real currency for that electorate.
Mm-hmm.
So if Elizabeth Warren continues to be found wanting, with the resources that Mayor Pete has, don't be surprised to see him, you know, potentially surprise in Iowa.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you surprise in Iowa and you start building momentum, it could be a snowball rolling
downhill. Do you think the Dr. Kopfler fetal remains scandal is going to stick to him at all? I mean, he was involved in, you know, he knew about that clinic, was the mayor of South Bend. He refused to allow a pregnancy center to open across the street or next door to, rather, the abortion clinic that Kopfler ran. Do you think that has any potential for having people take a harder look at him?
Maybe in a general election, but I think in the primary, when they start scrutinizing him a little bit more, they're going to go back to see how he did as mayor of South Bend, particularly with the black community there.
Right, and with his police force.
The police force.
And a very difficult relationship. Well, Dan Prof, thank you so much for giving us your time this afternoon. It was great to be with you.
Thank you.
A great conversation as ever. This has been Mary Fiorito sitting in today for Father Anthony here on Listener-Supported Winds of Change. Have a great week. God bless you.
What's there to say when the world makes no sense? Do we search deeper truths or sit on the fence? Can you see? Can you see? Meaningless thought, the shell appears strong, but the inside is rot. It's time to be stirred, the time is now.